Let's go, Rider Nation. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Welcome to another episode of the Piffles Podcast, your Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan podcast, and I am so excited for this one. We're not going to waste a lot of time here getting around. The gang's all here. You got me, Alex, Steve, and Greg are with me, of course, as always. Piffles Podcast brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Thanks for joining us. Very special guest joining us, and we're not going to waste a lot of his time waiting around. We're going to jump right to it. The legend, number 80 himself, is going to join us right now. Let's hit the opening kickoff. Now, last week, we found out that our guest here, Don Narcisse, Saskatchewan Rough Rider legend, Canadian Football Hall of Famer, of course, in the Plaza of Honor as well, is actually going into the Texas Southern Sports Hall of Fame. We're going to get into that here right away. And Don, it's been a long time. Welcome aboard. Thanks for joining us, and good to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate y'all hitting me up, man. I didn't think I was going to get that much publicity, but man, everybody been hitting me up. But when y'all called me up, man, to do the interview, I was like, I'm ready.
Well, it's been a while since you've been in Saskatchewan, so we're bringing you back a little bit here. First question I got to ask right off the bat, and it might be the most important one. How is Don Narcisse? How is your health doing right now?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm good, man. You know, I had that cancer scare, prostate cancer. That was like about maybe three to four years ago, but everything is good. You know, I do a yearly checkup every year, so everything is good.
Well, that's good to hear. We'll jump into the Texas Southern Sports Hall of Fame. You get the call the other day. Mm-hmm. What was it like getting that call, and what were your emotions like?
It was unbelievable. You know, I'm a kid that I was, you know, going to college, I was 5'6", 155 pounds. I was a one-star athlete. The only reason why I got a scholarship was because of my tight end coach. He knew the recruiter that was coming in from Texas Southern University that was going to look at our quarterback. And he told the recruiter that, you know, he has a great attitude, he works hard, and he can catch a BB in the dark. And that's how I got my scholarship. It's unbelievable. To know all the things about me growing up, my mom didn't want me to play any sports. It was because I have asthma, and she kept me away from sports. So in the sixth grade, it was time for me to go to middle school. I went and tried out for the football team, and I didn't tell her. And then I made the football team. I was on the B team, and I was always, you know, eighth grade B team, ninth grade B team, 10th grade, sophomore football. I did freshman. My senior year, it was seven guys that was always in front of me. And my senior year, I passed all of them up. And what I try to tell kids is that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. You see, those guys were real talented. They just didn't work hard at it. And I got a chance to be the starting receiver for the Lincoln Bumblebees. And man, it was history after that. Being able to get, I only had one scholarship. I was 145 pounds, 5'7". And man, it's unbelievable that that I did the things that I did at TSU. My senior year, I caught 88 passes for 1,074 yards and 15 touchdowns. So I guess that's why I'm getting inducted to the Hall of Fame.
Pretty good numbers.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and another thing is this, is that, man, my mom, man, She used to send me $20 every month. And I used to, man, I used to manage those $20, man. And it was unbelievable. And for me to be getting this award, you know, being in the Hall of Fame, is because of her, man. I wouldn't have done it without her. I still remember the time that it was time for me to leave. And man, I was at the table crying so hard, because that was my first time ever leaving the house. And it was time for me to go to TSU. And it was a good friend of mine. Well, a good friend of my brother. We call him, like, he's like one of the neighborhood brothers. His name was Robert Graham. And Robert Graham was like, "Hey, Miss Narcisse, I'll take him to I'll take him to school. I know y'all have to go to work and stuff like that." So before he showed up, he didn't know that I was crying so hard that I didn't want to go, because I had never left home before. And then when he showed up, it was like, man. And then he took me. We started driving to Houston, Texas. And then that's the year they had Hurricane Alicia. It was about to hit the next day. And I showed up to the university. And it was three guys in my room, and I was going to be the fourth. But they thought that the guy that brought me in was the guy that was moving in. And then they found out that it was me, because when he left, I'm sitting there. And they was like, man. And one of my roommates was like, man, when I seen you, I was like, man, the coach must have owe him a favor, the other coach a favor for getting him. And then when I got on the football field, then he realized that, man, my room dog is pretty cold. And from there, man, it just went off, you know. So it's unbelievable to be able to play. And, you know, you just can't make this up, you know. You just can't make it up, man. It's unbelievable. And another thing is this, is that my freshman year, I was backing up one guy. His name was Daryl Colbert. And Daryl was highly recruited. He was the highly recruited recruit, and I was behind him. And this dude would not let me get in the game. We were supposed to alternate. He'll never come out. The next thing you know, Daryl got freshman of the year. He the top guy. So the coaches got fired, and then another coach came in. So Daryl was working out with the new coach. And then one day I seen him, it was the summertime, I seen him working out. So I went out there. So I started doing football drills, and he had us going over a dummy, had three dummies, and we had to run over it, and he'll throw the football. So I'm running over, and he threw me the football, and I caught it with one hand. And coach was like, hey, come here, man, come here. He said, "What's your name?" I said, "Man, my name is Donald Narcisse." He said, "What side you play on?" I said, "I play behind him." He said, "Man, they never talked about you." I said, "This is what I want you to do. You're going to be on the other side." And that's how I got my start. That's how I got a chance to start at Texas Southern University. And like when I talk to kids, I always tell them, you never know. When you're doing some work in, you never know what people will see what you're doing. And by just doing that, just doing some extra work, that's how I got my starting. And then next thing you know, I set the record at 63 catches at Texas Southern University. Then my senior year, I broke it. I had 88 catches, 1,074 yards, you know, 15 touchdowns. So I made All-American and everything. So, man, it's unbelievable when I do tell this story. It's just like, it's just unreal, man. Unreal.
I got to ask, that one-handed catch, was it before or after the glass-cutting gloves? Because those gloves, I'm a little older than these two. You're the first receiver I remember wearing gloves.
Right.
And now they all wear gloves. It's
right. So those gloves that I was wearing, you see, when I was in college, my coach had his name was Coach Taylor, and he had coached for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And my favorite player was Lin Swan. And in the neighborhood, the kids used to, I had changed my name to Don Swan because I could catch just like him. But coach would not let us wear any gloves. He wanted us to catch with our hands, no matter what. So when I got to the CFL, my first year, I did it with no gloves. Even when it was cold and stuff like that, guys were like, man, you need to put some gloves on. Like, nah, man, my coach always said you got to be able to feel the ball. And then it got to a point where it was really, really cold. And then I started wearing those glass cutters. And then, you know, wearing those glass cutters, man, it's unbelievable, man. I just, But I can already catch anyway, but it made it even easier to catch the football.
Now, I got to say, this interview here is kind of a surreal moment for me. I grew up, I had two sports idols. There was Mario Lemieux as a Penguins fan, and it was Don Narcisse as a Rider fan. I remember 5, 6, 10, you know, my younger days, doing your touchdown dance and touch football. So I have to ask, how did you come up with it, and how did it stick?
You know, I started doing it, and then I started getting a little better at it. And then it got to a point where the defensive backs were like, man, keep doing that dance. And they said, you know, I'm doing that dance on them. And I got even better, and then I got even better at it. And it got to a point where every time I score my touchdown, I, you know, do that little shake back. And, man, it just was unbelievable to be able to do that and do it in a good sense, not really trying to shame people or nothing like that. It was really just entertainment.
Yeah, you still do that. For me and for my age, that's what made it stand out is you weren't. Right. You weren't mocking anybody. You were just celebrating. No. You were in your zone. I can tell you from experience, not everybody gets better at it the more they do it, because I definitely did not.
Right.
I couldn't do it to save my life, but I sure tried.
I can teach you how to do it.
I want to see that. Yeah. Next time you're in Regina, we'll get you and Steve, and we will film it. I want to see that.
Yeah, that's where they're going to retire my jersey.
They actually might rescind it after they see that video.
Right.
One time watching me dance, they're done.
Yeah, man.
Don, this Texas Southern Sports Hall of Fame going into it, they just reinstated the Sports Hall of Fame there. This is the first class since 1996. That's a long time.
That's a long time. That's really a long, long time, man.
Does that make it feel more special to you?
It does, because now, yeah, you know, being the first one after, you know, 1996, yes. And it's unbelievable, man. It's really unsurreal for me because, you know, when you're not expecting it, you want it to happen, but you don't know when it's going to happen. And, you know, all of a sudden it happens. And you start coming back with all the memories, man, all the things, all the people that helped you out. That's the key of living, man. You know, going through this journey, I didn't do it by myself. I had a lot of help, man. And it's unbelievable, man, that help that I receive, and just like going to Canada, just going to Canada was unsurreal because this guy named Harold Smith, he played at Texas Southern University, and he was he played for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. He had me to go to Saskatchewan football camp in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I had to call my mom because I was still in school, and I called her, and she said, well, Donald Ray, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you $40. I want you to give Harold $20. You keep $20 for yourself. I went to that football camp. It was almost about 400 guys out there, and they only wanted to sign. Well, first of all, the coaches seen Harold, and they thought I was Harold's little brother. And yeah. So, and they was like, nah. He's like, nah, that's Donald Narcisse. He go to Texas Southern University. And it was a 2-day camp, and after 2 days, they had about maybe 400 guys there because they didn't charge to for the camp, and they only wanted to sign 4 guys. And I went up to Coach Gregory, And I asked him the question. I was like, Coach Gregory, hey, do y'all need any receivers? He was like, no, we don't need no receivers, but we need you. Man, I was like, man. Then I called my mama, man. And then I was like, man, this guy said they want me. Man, that Harold Smith blessed me by taking me there, man. And every time I see him, I just now went to TSU. Now he's a quarterback coach. And I went just the other day down there. But man, I thank him every time I see him, man, for bringing me to that football camp. Because if I wouldn't have went to that football camp, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And you know, that's why I tell kids, you gotta make sure you. And you know, like Harold, he always give back. I do the same thing too, man. I share my story. I want to give kids the opportunity to do the things that I did. And man, that dude blessed me, man. He brought me down there to that camp, man. Man, it's unbelievable for me being on here, man, and explaining this to y'all, you know, having a good time. But I'm telling you, man, blessings, man. It's just unreal. It's unreal. Unreal.
Well, see, you can, I think the three, well, I know I can, and obviously Steve can. We can thank him for making us Rider fans, because I've said this, told this story several times on the podcast. I was actually raised by a Bomber fan. he was born in Manitoba, but he won tickets to a Rider game because he wasn't going to pay for them. So that was my first experience watching you play, and that's what made me a Rider fan.
Right.
Against the Ticats, I remember that game. So I guess I can thank him for making me a Rider fan as well.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, and, you know, going to Saskatchewan, man, it was, you know, like I tell kids, you got to be ready. And, you know, I had signed with the St. Louis Cardinals. That's how I met Ken Austin. And I made it. Man, I made it all the way to the last cut. And they only kept – I was 13th on the depth chart at the beginning. And I was number one at the end. And I was the one that was competing against the fifth receiver. But they cut that receiver, and they cut me too. And they just kept four receivers. And then next thing you know, I get that phone call. Saskatchewan Rough Riders want you to come. But no, let me tell you this. I had to call my mom because I had got cut, and I was crying because I had never been cut in my life. And she said, when one door closed, another one's going to open up. And I was like, man. And I didn't believe it. And then all of a sudden, I got that phone call from Rambo. And they had a flight waiting for me for the next morning. I left at about 4 o'clock. I left at about 4 o'clock. I made it there about 9:30. Practice started at 9 o'clock. So I cried all the way there. And all I'm thinking about, I know I ain't got to practice or nothing like that, right? So I'm thinking that, you know, I don't have to practice. So I stepped off that plane. They sent me to the field house. They had me to put my cleats on. And they said, we want you to practice. I went out there and I started seeing guys running in motion and stuff. I had never seen that in my life. So I'm trying to figure this stuff out. I'm like, man, he not on fast, you know, like he's running towards the line of scrimmage. So then they stopped practice and they was like, okay, Don, this is what we want you to do. We're going to do some one-on-ones. We want you to run 10 routes. We're going to call the first route out for you. So the first route was a hook. And I run a hook three different ways. And I beat him on the hook. Boom. Next thing you know, I caught 9 out of 10. At about 1 o'clock, they had a guy that was number 80. At 1 o'clock, they put him on Air Canada and gave me number 80. Just like that. And I was like, man. And I was like, man, that's how they do it out here. So I know when in September, I know that the NFL players are coming. So, you know, you got to be ready for it. And I guess he wasn't ready. And I came in. I was like, boom. And next thing you know, man, I got I got it, you know. So it was unbelievable, man. But the one thing that really happened to me that was let me tell y'all this story. I had this little kid when I had an apartment. This little kid would always, man, he would always come knock on my door and want an autograph. And then I was like, man, here go. Then he'll come back the next day. He want another autograph. I'm like, oh. He's like, oh, it's my birthday coming up. I say, hey, man, when it's your birthday, I want to come meet your mom and dad, and I'll take you out for your birthday. He's about maybe 8 years old. So I went to his house and stuff and, you know, I talked to his parents. Next thing you know, I was staying with them. I stayed with them for 11 years. I didn't have to pay no rent. I didn't have to pay nothing. They blessed me, man. I'm like, man, that's my Canadian mom, man. They did so much for me, man. And, you know, it was so good because, you know, I was away from home, but I really wasn't away from home because every time I come from practice, I had a family to go to. And man, I became I had the record with consecutive games of catching a pass. And my mom came down. And my mom got a chance to meet my Canadian mom. And my mom was crying so hard because they took care of her baby. And man, the Farberry family, man, if they didn't do that for me, I would never be where I'm at. And, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, I'm staying there and, you know, the kids will bring some of their friends over and they'll say, yeah, we got Darnus, he's in the basement. And then they'll go knock on the door and or they'll go down the stairs. Oh, that's him. And run back up. And it was so funny, man. Oh, man, it was unbelievable for me to be staying with a family. And I'm one of the best players on the team. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable, man. And I still keep up with my Canadian mom. It's unbelievable, man. You know, when you tell this story, man, you can't even make this up, man. You know, it's, man, if I wouldn't have had them in my life, I pretty much wouldn't have been a Hall of Famer. Because I was down there, man, I had a family to go to. You know, I had structure. You know, I had to go home, you know, go work, go home, have a meal with my family, stuff like that. So it's unbelievable, man.
I knew Renee in college, and I used to bug her all the time. I'm like, can I please meet Doc? Can I please? Like, I was begging at points. But never happens.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
Don, you talk about coming up to Saskatchewan, obviously not knowing the waggle at the time you mentioned. So you signed here on September 1st. You played, your first game was September 19th.
Mm-hmm.
You actually caught a touchdown in that game. I think mm-hmm. it was in Edmonton.
That was in Edmonton, yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you remember who threw you the ball?
Who was our quarterback at that time? What's his name, man? You know, I forgot some names. Bentram.
Jeff Bentram.
Yeah, Jeff Bentram. Yeah.
were you nervous in your first pro game here, up here?
No, I wasn't nervous. I wasn't nervous at all. I was always prepared. You know, I wasn't nervous at all. I even caught that touchdown and I was so doggone happy, man. But no, was not nervous. I know how to compete, and I wasn't nervous. I was doing my job.
For a guy coming from Texas, coming up to Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. learning the new game, the CFL, what was the biggest shock for you coming up here?
How cold it is out there and that wind blowing. It's unbelievable. And the one thing that I didn't do, I didn't wear any sleeves because I like to feel the ball on my arm. Yeah, that weather is something else, man. You know, I used to, just a little trick that I used to do. I used to put Vaseline all over my body with a wing. When you put Vaseline all over your body, the wind can't blow into your skin. So it kind of helped me out, but it really didn't help me out. It still was cold. So to get past that, it's something. Yeah.
I've lived here 40 years. The cold is still shocking to me. So I understand.
Yeah.
But also being in this community, everyone talks about the fishbowl, the bubble. Being a rider is a big deal, more so than any other market for the CFL. What's it like, I guess, being just shy of being a walking god in this market?
Man, it's unbelievable. Man, he loves the riders out there, man. That's why I always gave back. That's why I had moved back in 2010 after I got inducted to the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. Stayed out there for about 8 years. I had raised about, I was doing my football camps with a, I was doing a camp with an event too. And I had raised like at least $800,000+.
Wow.
And it was unbelievable, man. People coming to the football camp. I went to like 3 different places. Yeah, at least 10 different places in the province and stuff like that. So it was unbelievable, man. Yeah, it was unbelievable. I was doing it. And those kids had so much of a great time. It's something that had never really been done before. And to be doing it for like 8 years. And it was unreal, man. It was unreal.
Now, Don, when we talk to someone who was on that 89 team, and especially the receivers, you look at it, there's Don Narcisse, Ray Algard, Jeff Fairholm, Mark Guy, the Duke, James Ellingson. I mean, that's a cast of characters right there.
Right.
But one of them actually listens to this show, and he actually hosted with us not too long ago.
He's our replacement Steve.
Jeff Fairholm listens to this show.
How you doing?
I know he's going to be listening to this right now, especially with you on the show.
Right.
Without getting him in too much trouble,
mm-hmm.
Do you have a story you could share about Jeff Fairholm?
I don't too much have a story on him, but I'm just saying that guy there was the truth. That dude can run, man. Run and catch. It's unbelievable. He was good. Yeah, I don't have nothing on him now, other than that he can hit that dude that can ball. Yeah. And without him, man, we wouldn't be where we was. Because, you know, Elgar was like he was a slot back, but he wasn't that fast. But he can hit you and slap you and do all that. But Fairholm, he gone. And it was pretty good to have, you know, you have Elgar and then you have, you know, Lightning over there. So it was pretty good.
I love the new stadium. It's beautiful. But it's not Taylor Field. It's not Taylor Field. And that's where I grew up loving football. That's where we all grew up loving football.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite memory of the old stadium?
I think the memory I have is when I first played there for the first time. I didn't know too much about the Riders of them. You know, I didn't know they were going to show up. I think they were losing that year. They had a losing record or whatever. But, you know, I played in the game. It was like in the middle of the season. Man, there was so many people out there. And I'm like, man. God, and they love their team. You know, that's the key. And it was unbelievable just to see that. It was unbelievable.
So what's Don Narcisse doing now to stay busy, you know, other than getting inducted into every Hall of Fame you come across?
Hold on one second. Hey, your keys right to the bottom. Hold on, I'll get your keys. Okay. Hey, yeah, I own my own business. I have a cargo van where I have a contract with CVS and Walgreens. We drop off medicine and stuff like that. So, yeah, we'll keep it going. And I personal train. Yeah, you know, I'm a personal trainer to help, you know, help these little young kids, you know, get into football and stuff like that.
I want to go back to November 5th, 1999.
Okay.
That was your final game. Mm-hmm. It was in BC. Did you know going into that last month of the season that was going to be your last few games?
No.
Or did you always plan on keeping on going?
I was always planning on keeping on going. You know, as a football player, you always want to play as long as you can. The key for me is that, you know, I you got to cut me to not put me back on that football field. So, and then when I didn't go back, it was pretty good, man. It felt pretty good. And just to know all the things that you accomplished, you know, playing the game for 13 years is unbelievable.
And how hard was that for you to not go back?
It was hard at the beginning. It was hard at the beginning, but, you know, the Rough Riders, they had sent me on a trip with my family to Hawaii. They paid for it and everything. Man, we had a great time. Oh, my goodness. And I think that was the one time that I got a chance to be with my family and stuff like that. So we had a great time. And I kind of got that football off my mind and stuff like that.
And now just to kind of come full circle, going back to the Texas Southern Sports Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Headlined by Don Narcisse. And then you have guys like James West. He was okay up here in the CFL. Michael Strahan, whatever.
What's he done?
What's it like going into a Hall of Fame? I mean, with James West, a guy that you played against with the Bombers for so many years.
It's going to be nice, man, because, you know, James West did a favor for me. Well, he did something how can I put it? He came back to the university and he had one of his receivers to come in, James Murphy. And he let James Murphy talk, and James Murphy, he was telling the story like he caught 100 and some passes. And I'm looking at the dude, I'm like, man, he not that big. I said, man, if he can catch 100 passes, I know I can do the same thing. So it gave me an idea of, you know, like, man, I can do the same thing out there. And then when I got a chance to go to the Canadian Football League, I caught 123 passes. Yeah, so it kind of like set me up to where I wanted to be and stuff like that. But, you know, getting a chance to meet Murphy was something, man. Being in college, getting a chance to meet a guy that caught 100 and some passes, you know, and then you saying to yourself, like, man, I can do it too. And I, you know, one year I hit that 123 on him. Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Well, Mr. Narcisse, congratulations again on the induction to the Texas Southern Sports Hall of Fame. Very well deserved. And as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you, pleasure to see you and hear from you, because we miss you here in Saskatchewan. I know went back home with your health a few years ago. Mm-hmm. We miss you here in Saskatchewan. There's still 80 jerseys out in the crowd every single home game. There's still Narcisse jerseys everywhere. So please know that you are loved here in Saskatchewan. Thanks for joining us, and take care.
Hey, let me say one more thing. I got a book coming out. Supposed to be coming out. It might be coming out this year. It's called The 40, the $40 that my mom gave me. So y'all be looking out for it. I might need y'all to help me out to reach out to the kids out there and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's something that I want to do to give back out there in Saskatchewan, man, and go out there and see the kids again, all the kids that came to my football camp. I'm going to reach out to them. They're going to be much older. And so it's going to be unbelievable, man.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to that dropping up here. Can't wait to get that.
Okay. All right, dear man. I appreciate y'all, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Don. Thank you very much.
All right, Dan. All right, bye.
Thanks, Don.
Book on Donald Narcisse. Matt, you know I'm getting that.
I'm sure we're all getting it, but
I'll race you to the bookstore.
Legit was the first piece of merchandise I ever got signed by a writer, Don Narcisse.
I wonder how much of that book Rob Vanstone is going to be in. So you know he's got to have his hand in there somewhere.
See, we should have flipped our interviews around recently. We could have asked Rob after we knew that was coming out.
As I have Rob's hockey book sitting just 2 feet away from me here. Great read so far. I'm only partial way through it. But, of course, Don Narcisse here on the Piffles podcast going into the Texas Southern Sports Hall of Fame. That's the opening kickoff presented by Kathy Festian of Roy LePage Regina Realty. Let's jump to our Churchill Brewing Company odds and end zones. I got to get this open on another page here. Have all my Don Narcisse stuff open.
How do we follow that up?
Probably just walk away, honestly.
I love Don Narcisse. I cannot, like, yes, there's a certain level of fandom there, but there's such genuine emotion every time he talks. Like, I was almost tearing up every time he teared up. There would have been a lot of crying if that would have happened.
Well, thinking about his mom who passed away not too long before he got into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. Very emotional. But I'll tell you that 1989 team, these guys will not give us anything on a story on these guys. Every time we've had somebody on, they're tight-lipped.
So they're good. You know they're pretty good.
Like these stories.
And Jeff, I am directly talking to you. One day we're getting a story. I don't care if it's on air or not. I want a story.
That's why they won the cup. Tight-lipped and camaraderie. They ain't spilling the beans on anybody. That was a team.
You know who
would have really? What has Michael Strahan ever done?
Yeah, right.
That's what I want to know. Like Don Narcisse better be the headliner there.
Morning show TV, like whatever. Big deal. And your sack record, come on, that didn't really count. Brett Favre ducked.
And the Super Bowl doesn't count because that was
Eli.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
There was some Rider news, actually, over the last week. We didn't talk about this because it happened, of course, the day after our show came out last week. Larry Dean, linebacker, retires, joins the Riders as a player personnel coordinator. And I love that move. I think it's great to, that was the role that Jeremy O'Day had when he retired and joined, the management side of things. So really interesting to see that going to Larry Dean, going to be working almost directly with Jeremy O'Day. I like the move.
I love it. Anytime a player retires and stays with that team, it shows that they're invested in the community that has embraced them. And do you think Larry Dean, two actual seasons playing for the Riders? And it's like he's been here his entire career. Everyone's like, sure, Larry Dean, all-time great. And I'm like, end of an era. I'm like, it was two seasons.
But the comeback.
Three contract years, two seasons.
That's the part about this, his retirement, that shocked me the most was it did feel like he's been here for a decade. Just something about the guy, he just embraced Saskatchewan right off the bat and the fans embraced him. Was he the first or the second that had the Achilles injury in that one practice? But it was, that was the end of the, or the start of the downfall for this team was losing him. So it's good to see him stick around, and I'm interested to see what the player personnel coordinator is going to be doing. Under the last coach, we know he would have been setting up bowling teams. But I'm curious what he's going to be doing now.
Eight seasons in the CFL, played eight seasons, 25th all-time in tackles. Guy was still putting up numbers. He could very easily, continue climbing that list. I don't know. Maybe there was no calls for him from other teams. Maybe this is he just put his playing days behind him and wanted to move on. I still think he could play.
I think he could play too. That's what kind of surprised me. It was obviously the Riders were moving on, obviously pacing free agency, but I don't think he took a step back. Like, they didn't need to replace him, but like, it's just one of those things. And unless he was always kind of deciding to take a step back, maybe that's why it was all quiet around him. Like, there's no rumors of him even fielding offers anywhere else.
No.
Part of me wonders if we see some injuries in the linebacking core, if the player personnel coordinator might be coming.
No. Oh, we're pulling a Chad Packard? We're pulling a Chad Packard, are we?
Hey, a guy can dream. You want to see him on the field one more time.
Let's hope Jameer Thurman does not get hurt, okay?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like I said, there's only one person that can replace Larry Dean in that roster right now, and that was Jameer Thurman. So
yeah.
Let's hope it's not the other way around.
Another defensive lineman brought in, RJ McIntosh, kind of plays the Lanier role, can play the inside. He started out as a kind of an undersized tackle, kind of a bigger end, rush end. Competition on that D-line is going to be something I'm really looking forward to seeing in training camp, because you can kind of pencil in three of the four starters. It's going to be a big rotation, 7-8 guys on that D-line every single game. But there's room for, you know, a couple of young guys. So I'm really looking forward to seeing some of these guys come into camp and seeing what they have.
The thing I'm liking about some of these signings is we're seeing guys who can come in and fill a spot. We're seeing actual talent step in as these extra signings. And there's been a lot of it. Like, a lot of, if you look through some of the scouting reports, the guys they're signing, we're seeing huge talent, great talent, plus talent. They all obviously have some of their issues and the weaknesses, but there is a lot of positivity coming out of these, especially again on the defensive side of the ball, where we kind of fell off at the end of last year. It's nice to see the team bring in guys who might actually be able to compete for a position, as opposed to we knew going in kind of who the starting 24 were last year.
And McIntosh bounced around the NFL. He has 3 seasons with the Giants, and then kind of bounced around on practice rosters, so he's only 27. Like, he's still got some good football years in him, so hopefully he can push the guys, because we need active competition on that line.
I think the whole defense is just going to be full of hungry players, because there's a lot of, maybe not a lot of spots, but there's a lot of guys coming in for, you know, a handful of spots. Yeah, at least in the starting lineup. So it'll be really interesting to see how that roster takes shape, and just the amount of competition is going to be on this team with a new coaching staff. You know, we talked about the receivers last week as well too. There's going to be tons of competition there. I mean, honestly, outside of running back, all across the board, there's going to be tons of competition for the Riders here in training camp coming up, which is what, 2 months away. So we're getting there.
I'm really curious on the rotation for Canadians on that defensive line, because off the top of my head, it's DeBeer and Corte Lake Moore. Then is that it?
They have Nick Daly as well too.
Oh, I forgot about Daly. Yes,
on the end. And that's why I think, and we'll talk about this as the draft comes closer, but Canadian needs, I think they're at the point where, with the Canadian talent, they don't have to draft positional need. They can just go best player available. And it's never a bad idea to stock up on O-linemen. But if you want to look at a Canadian need, you might have to look at that D-line. If they can find a
thin
tackle or something.
It's thin where everywhere else they're fairly deep. Like, receiver, we talk about DB, we talk about linebacker. They got linebackers for days, and a couple of them are twins, and like, it's just that D line is definitely somewhere where they need to start looking at. Maybe we need to start stocking the cupboards here.
So we'll talk more about the Canadian draft maybe next week, or as the draft gets closer, because I think there's some holes there. They could possibly go for more receivers maybe later in the draft, but definitely in the trenches, which we've seen from Corey Mace and company, that the trenches are, they're putting an emphasis on them this off season. So we'll see what they do there. Banjo Bowl, the Banjo Bowl bus is a
back
go
to Winnipeg.
Back to Winnipeg.
On purpose.
Who spelt that wrong? Steve threw you under the bus.
Oh, 100%. It was not me.
But it was on the poster. It didn't need to be anywhere else. It was fine.
Every other time it's been me, but that time it was not.
You know what the best part about going to Winnipeg is? Leaving.
Former con.
Yeah.
The good news is our bus takes you both ways.
So if you're thinking about going to the Banjo Bowl, want to join a bus of 56 other hardcore rider fans going to the game, we have a bus going. $300 early bird price until April 1st, goes up to $325 after. Still a really good price. Gets you ride there and back from Regina. We'll pick you up along the highway as well, too, as long as you're on the number one. Not literally on the number one.
Well, you could be. That'd be easier for us to pick them up if they're literally sitting right there.
Yeah, just jump. We'll open the door, jump, time that just perfectly.
Not even the door. They get the suitcase under the bus. Just roll in.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll pick up in Brandon.
Yeah. Stop in lunch or stop for breakfast in Brandon, then go straight to the game. Gives us about an hour and a half, 2 hours of tailgating time, which is always one of my favorite parts of the whole entire trip is the tailgate in Winnipeg. They treat us, considering they don't really like Rider fans, they treat us very well. Staying
every once in a while, they'll
walk in through the tailgate.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you'll get booed and you just move on. It's like, okay. Yeah.
That's cute. But all right. Ride to Winnipeg, ride to the game, ticket to the game, hotel for the night, which we're staying, Steve, I think, Polo Park.
Yep. We moved into Polo Park this year.
Tons of bars and restaurants for after the game. So we'll take you to the hotel. You're on your own for the night. And then we'll hit breakfast in the morning, leave Winnipeg, and then stop in
Greg's. My favorite part.
Yep.
God's country.
But Ferlin's from there. You can't call it that if Ferlin's
God's
from there.
God's country minus one.
Yeah, you know what? The only good thing that Musiman ever delivers is chicken. And easy. I will. The best part of last year's trip was Ferlin calling ahead to get a bucket of chicken to carry on the bus.
50 Wait,
first
pieces.
Of all, how dare you? Yeah, it was 50 pieces. How dare you besmirch the good name of Kirk Benton? That okay, man was a CFL reporting legend. From my hometown.
I'll give you that one.
I really want some roasted chicken right now. How many people on the bus this year are going to follow suit with Ferlin and order chicken for pickup to take with them, like a big 50 piece or something? Because I'm totally going to do that. That was the best part.
When I book our spot this year, I am giving them a warning. Like, make chicken and make it like you've never seen it before.
Yeah. The best part is it came in a pizza box.
Yeah, well, that's how you get the chicken from the Red Barn. Well, how else would you get the chicken? A bucket?
In a bucket?
Cliche. That's cliche.
Touche.
However the Red Barn does it, they do it right.
That's right. So we'll stop in Mooseman for lunch, head back.
They
to
really
Regina
need to start paying after. For all this advertisement we give them.
They could pay us in chicken when we show up.
That's right.
That's it. That's all we want.
So if you're interested in going to the Banjo Bowl, it's a great trip. Go up the Saturday morning, come back on the Sunday afternoon. $300 until April 1st. So if you want to get in on that, send us a DM on social media. You know where to find us, Facebook, Twitter, or X, all those places. Email us piflespodcast@gmail.com. If you're have any questions about it, want to jump in, all we ask is a $50 deposit, which goes obviously towards the full price later on, just to hold your spot, and you sit back, we do the rest.
And legit tickets are already moving. It kind of surprises me that people trust us this much.
20% sold out already.
They obviously don't watch or listen to us because I don't trust us with our money.
Oh, we have a little bit of money. We spent it all on prizes. So there's going to be prizes on the bus as well too. So, lots of good fun. And of course, our sponsors help out as well too, Churchill Brewing Company. For post game,
they don't supply prizes, but they certainly supply
fun.
What's the best? Yeah, they supply some fun.
Yes.
So it's a good trip, and I plan on making it this year, I hope. Depending on other commitments to the Regina Thunder.
I was gonna say you have to pry something out of my cold dead hands before, you know, I miss that trip. I will weekend at Bernie's that trip.
I'm not gonna lie, I FOMO'd last year pretty badly at the Thunder versus Hilltops game. So
you should have. Last year might have been the best one yet. How often do you get a chance to play bubble ball soccer
I wasn't
on
there?
RG Field?
Oh, because you shared the field with
because you saw Chris Trevler.
Oh, if I would have known he was there, I would have run him the hell over. I would have found some way to just, oh, I just happen to be standing over here. Come hit me.
You could have showed him all.
Thank you for being such a big supporter and fan of the CFL and myself personally.
I was just going to go look for that.
God damn it.
It's like, wait, I got the Strevy clip.
The gift that keeps on giving.
I hate you both.
Yeah, so if you have any questions about the Banjo Bowl, shoot us a message. We'll be more than happy to help out and join us as we head to Winnipeg. Actually, speaking of Winnipeg and the Bombers, sad news in the CFL over the last week. Coach Dave Ritchie passed away at the age of 85. I always remember the interviews that he did on TSN. Did a ton of them on the sidelines. Farhan Lalji, I think, he posted a picture of him interviewing Dave Ritchie. But just one of the great characters of the CFL, but also just seemed like a very genuinely good person. And coaching the CFL for a long time. And yeah, sad for the CFL to lose, you know, a legend like that.
When it comes somebody who grew up on football in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, Dave Ritchie was a steady presence in the league. And he was constantly, you look at where he stayed, Winnipeg, BC, he was always on the opposition sidelines. And he was just one of those names that was just CFL royalty.
Like, Ritchie was like one of the all-time CFL statesmen growing up. Like you said, like he was... And everyone always wants to talk about the old boys club and how everyone just cycles coaches in the CFL. And yeah, there's been some changes recently, but Dave Ritchie was a staple in this league. I think on the Bombers, he's like one of their top coaches. I think he's like third or fourth, something like that. Like, he has a winning record as a Bombers coach, especially in that era. That's something very
that's
special.
Impressive.
Yeah. That's very impressive. Actually, I think O'Shea just recently passed him, so he might be fourth, maybe. Because I know Cal Murphy and Bud Grant are obviously on that list.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no. Like, it's unfortunately I've reached that age where the guys that I grew up that were like coaches and staples of this league are unfortunately way older than I am, and they're not as young as I remember them. And yeah, just unfortunately, we're gonna remember these guys as they go on because they put in a lot of time in the league. But the best thing Dave Ritchie ever did, beat the Baltimore Stallions in the Grey Cup.
Yeah, he was the head coach of BC Lions, yeah. Right, in 94?
Yeah, held off the inevitable.
But at least, if anything, Calgary didn't beat them. So, mm-hmm. 1995 Grey Cup, were you guys, like, wanting the Stamps to win? To be like, hey, yeah, go Canadian team? Or was it ABC? Because to me, it was ABC. I was the only person. I remember that being 10 years old at a 9 years old at a Grey Cup party. And because I was the only person wanting Baltimore to win because I hated the Stamps. And they like held me up and lifted up my shirt and spread mayo and mustard all over me for cheering for against the Stamps. It was weird. Like, I was the one kid and there's a bunch of 40-year-old
people. I was going to say, what did your mother do to you?
She was in the living room watching the game. She didn't care. I'll never forget that. It was just, looking back on it, pretty weird, actually. But
the BC Lions one versus Baltimore, I remember that one being very Canada versus, it was legit like an invasion. We got to hold back those evil Americans, and they're cheating because they get no ratio and blah 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 blah. I remember that one very well. The Calgary Baltimore one, I remember being the Battle of the Horses type thing, but I wasn't as passionate about that one.
For me, I didn't have the hate for Calgary yet that I do now. I was 11 at the time. I was at the game. Great game, or great, you know, to be at my first Grey Cup, but I had no real dog in that fight to, you know, as to who won. But I would have leaned Calgary at the time because Canada. I didn't know until later that I hate Calgary as much as anyone else.
And I think that going back to that 94 one, I think because that was a closer game too, like it came down to a Lou Pisaglia field goal at the end of the game. Whereas the 95 game wasn't particularly close. So I don't know if that had something to do with it or not, but anyway, talk about the Stamps losing a Grey Cup. That's always
a win.
Stamps not winning. That's a good day in my books. CFL announced that they're hosting two passing showcases to assist in the development of the next generation of Canadian football players.
Before we get to where you want to go with this.
Yeah.
I want to commend the CFL on this because usually it's U Sports and blah, 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 which is fine. Let's get that game up as well. They've also included CGFL players, which I think is very important. Those players deserve just as much of an opportunity to something like this. So I'm happy about that. And that's one thing the Canadian game is missing is not missing. There's plenty of good quarterbacks out there, but they definitely get overshadowed by the third string quarterback from an SEC team. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is.
And we've harped on the league and for a while about the idea of developing the game ahead of the CFL, or I guess behind the CFL level, you know, at the grassroots level with these young kids, get them into it, get them interested, get them going in their development. And to see the league do this is fantastic. I hope it's a continual thing, and I hope they expand it beyond just the passing game, because it's nothing but great news for the future of the league going forward.
Well, and just goes to, you know, the whole marketing talk we've had about the CFL. Look at the Regina Flag Football League. It's sponsored by the NFL, so your teams are, you know, the Seahawks, the Vikings, the Rams, the Giants, et cetera, et cetera. Gotta have some sort of Canadian Football League representation there somehow. There has to be a way to get kids to want to watch the CFL and not automatically think, oh, I'm on the Packers, I'm going to watch the Packers play. Sorry for your losses, Steve, with all their free agent losses.
Hey, we got Josh Jacobs. You shut your mouth. I'm happy.
I'm actually going to drop him this year in fantasy.
Why? He's got nobody behind him.
That's true.
And a talented offense.
Okay.
I've changed my mind. I think I want you to join any fantasy football league I join.
But anyway, there's got to be a way for the CFL to capitalize on this and go even more, you know, grassroots than they are. So, but where I wanted to go with this, one of the comments, and it was Toronto Argonauts quarterback Chad Kelly,
league MOP out, by the way, league MOP. Yeah. Let's remind everybody, he's league MOP,
face of the league, kind of, I guess, right? Trending that way, right? Like they're
supposed to be.
They want to market him. Right now, they're not going to, but they want to. Tweeted out that he's waiting for his invitation to help out. First off, I like that he wants to be a part of this. I think that's great. If you're going to be, you know, the face of a league, face of a team, you should want to do this and be involved somehow, anything you can do. And for young players to go out and be like, holy crap, you know, there's the, you know, MLP, or there's the best quarterback in the league or whatever, right? Like, learn from them. That's a great thing. And that should be a welcome thing. But bro, read the room. Chad Kelly, probably not a guy you want around right now.
And I understand this is an extreme example, but this is like O.J. Simpson going, I'm doing a running back camp. No, sorry, we do not need you here right now. And that's if Chad Kelly went to this thing and you bring the press in,
no one's going to be talking about the CIS CJFL players. They're going to be asking Chad nonstop about this lawsuit right now.
Yeah.
So yes, I love his enthusiasm, but yeah, just understand where you're at right now. But like, this is a bad idea.
And to me, the tweet itself was just weird. It sounded like he was almost pouting about it. Like, I'm waiting for my invite. If he would have just left it at the original, you know, this sounds great, would have been perfect. Sure. You know, still support the league and promote the league. But to add that waiting for my invite was just a very poor me, pouty type finish to that tweet. He's got to deal with his legal situation before he really gets back into promoting the league in a more official capacity. You know, they can't stop him from tweeting, but they can stop him from making public appearances on behalf of the league right now.
Like, really, you bring your Cody Fajardo's, your Trevor Harris's, your Zach Caleros's, your Vernon Adams. Like, guys with squeaky clean images and will still get you a decent bit of publicity. Would you prefer to have the MOP? Probably. Should you right now? No. So.
And the sad part I see is if you look at a lot of the responses to his tweet, and a lot of people are saying, you know, read the room and all of that. But then there's the people spouting off about, you know, innocent until proven guilty, which is accurate. He is innocent until proven guilty, and it's a lawsuit. He's not going to be innocent or guilty. It's about image at this point for the CFL. It's not about his legal situation or his innocence or guiltiness or whatever you want to call it. The league has to be smart with their image. If they want to continue to grow, that's what they have to look after. And to see these responses of innocent until proven guilty, y'all need to stop. We all know that that's the fact in legal matters. But that doesn't matter when you're dealing with public image and promotion and all of these things. Just stop.
It's all about public relations. To go back to my OJ thing, he was found innocent. Still people didn't want to touch him with a 10-foot clown pole. That's just the way it was. And at some point, Chad Kelly can probably rehab his public image, but this is not how it's going to happen. It's too fresh. Maybe when this is in his rear view next year, maybe he can go there and chuck the ball around with a bunch of CGFL kids. That'd be awesome. But right now, probably not a good idea.
Good marketing for the league and for individual teams. As we're kind of talking marketing, PR, that kind of thing. Just before we wrap up here, liked having some of the riders at the Brier in Regina. I'm kind of drafting an article together about marketing, and part of it is you need to get players or representatives of the team at every event, at every Pats game, at every Blades game, Raiders, all that kind of stuff. A big event like the Brier, get a couple people there, right? The Calgary Stampeders are actually doing a really good job of that right now, sending players to Hitman games and to Roughneck games. So just having four or five guys in the concourse at a table or two and signing autographs, and maybe there's, you know, a voucher for buy one, get one free tickets or something that you can do. Riders are doing that, putting players out in events. I'd like to see more of it, but they're, you know, starting to get that way. And same with Calgary. I'm sure other teams are doing that as well too, but two that I've really kind of noticed here. They're starting to get it. They're starting to figure it out. And I hope it really picks up steam.
Your players are your best tool to sell this game. Well, that and slogans about how big your balls are, but that's beside the point. But your bigger players are, yeah, they're bigger. That's bigger. All that matters. They're bigger. Yeah. Maybe meatier, I don't know. They're bigger regardless. But your players are your best vessel to sell this game, because there's a lot of very funny, like interviewing Don tonight, you could feel his emotion through the screen, and I hope it translates well to the people that watch. Like, he loves this game. He loves giving back to the community. you have many players like that. You get them one-on-one with actual fans, you will create more fans that way. You'll create lifelong fans. So get them out there.
Going back to Don, I can't wait for that book. Yeah, I think that's kind of where we'll have to leave it there. So great talking to a Rider legend again. Of course, Don, it was tough to see him go back home to Texas after spending so much time here in Saskatchewan, obviously, to be with family with his cancer battle. But doing great now. And of course, good to always chat with him. And Greg or Steve, you showed up this time. That was nice. Last time we had him on the show here, you didn't.
And honestly, I don't have a lot of regrets over the years doing this show. I don't even remember why I couldn't make it, but you know, it had to have been serious if I was missing, because I was serious. When I grew up, Don Narcisse was the guy. That was my, you know, CFL idol. That's the guy I wanted to be. You know, a lot of kids dream of being, you know, an NFL star, a hockey star. I wanted to be Don Narcisse. And to be able to sit here and, you know, chat with the guy, hear his story, hear all about his time in college, that'll go down as one of the coolest moments for me on this show. So I'm glad we got to do it again. And I'm glad I could actually be here this time. That was cool.
And I wasn't kidding when I said he was one step away from a walking god in this market.
Yeah.
Like, he was a big freaking deal. And like I said, I begged Renee, like, come on, I just want to meet Don. All I want, like, she was a good friend of mine, and she's like, oh, I don't know. Like, it's, I'm like, oh, come on. But, hey, I got my autograph ball eventually.
But, I like the love the knocking on the basement door. It's him. Running away.
And you can picture that too, can't you?
Oh yeah. Little Greg doing that, you know, yesterday.
Absolutely. That would have been like 20-year-old Greg doing it, but yeah, 100%. I would have done that. Oh my God, it's on our season, Ran.
Yep. So thanks again, Don. I hope you listening and watching enjoyed that as much as we did, because it's always great hearing, you know, from legends and our heroes. So that was great. But that's going to do it for us this week here on the Piffles Podcast. Of course, Piffles Podcast brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Special thanks, of course, go out to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty and Churchill Brewing Company for their support making this show possible. Thanks for watching on Sasstel Max on YouTube, listening on your favorite podcast platform. We appreciate it. We'll be back again probably next week. Maybe. We'll see what happens.
I don't know.
We'll see what news the Riders break tomorrow.
Yeah, because you know
something. Come on, Craig. Happening. Let us know before so we're prepared for it. Like, come on, we've talked about this, Greg. Come on.
As always, this is Tyler Gilbert with Ghost Behind Your Mind.